are listening to the Tableau Podcast.
Welcome to the second episode of the Tableau Podcast. I mentioned this yesterday, but by nature, I am a very timid person, believe it or not. I am not that confident. Whenever I'm making music, like when I'm releasing an album, I'm always like thinking to myself, what if people hate this? What if they don't like it? What if it sucks? Like, even if people are telling me it's okay, it's good, I'm just not very confident. So I have my trusted manager, Eddie Nam, in the studio with me to hold my hand as if I'm like a little baby.
Just like a baby toddler.
He literally flew in from LA just so that this launch goes right. So he's going to be in the vicinity of me. You can follow the Tableau Podcast. It's at the Tableau Podcast on IG and Twitter. So today, I'm actually going to just have a conversation with Eddie since he keeps jumping in anyways. So what's been up for you?
Not much, as you know.
How have you been?
You know, I've been great. I've been missing the tour life, obviously, but, you know.
Let me stop you for a second.
Okay.
Because I just realized a lot of the people that are listening right now don't know who you are. So can I introduce you?
Yeah, you can introduce me, but I'd like to introduce myself as well at some point properly.
This is Eddie Nam, the CEO of EN Management. He manages all of Epikai's international stuff. He also manages K-pop sensation Eric Nam and happens to be Eric Nam's younger brother. Is that good?
Yeah. That's...
He's got a dog named Rocky.
Yeah, that's actually where I was going to jump in. But
a golden retriever, beautiful golden retriever, right. Which is actually the best part about Eddie, like the best part of Eddie's existence.
You know, I'd agree with that.
Yeah.
Actually. So that's pretty spot on.
Mm-hmm.
No further comments.
Yeah. So how have you been doing?
Dude, I've been doing well. As you know, I live in LA. I'm just doing my thing, just working and
just doing your thing, huh? What is this thing we're talking about?
You know, just dog walking and
I mean, why are you in Korea though? For real?
Jobs.
Why are you in Seoul right now?
No, I'm here for some work stuff, you know. I got a few things brewing.
What does managing an artist really take? Like, you know, for anybody that's like thinking about doing that or like wondering what it is.
I think, you know, you just gotta be plugged in. You gotta know what's brewing, what's hot, what's gonna be hot.
So you're like a barista.
Exactly.
I've actually seen Eddie Nam, my manager, more than my wife this year. I'm not kidding. Because our album dropped March 11th, and then we went on tour like right away. We went to Europe, did seven cities in Europe, and then immediately went to the States, and we did like an 18-show North American tour. So I was with him for maybe, you know, a good 2 months, just away from home. So that's a lot of time to be together. So that was weird.
Yeah, it was a lot of time, you know, spent together. And
on buses.
Do you guys ever argue?
Huh?
Do you guys ever argue just from like proximity?
No, but no. A lot of the other people that are there, like in our proximity, get kind of annoyed. Because I don't know if you guys can notice just from like the last, you know, few minutes, but this guy is a talker. He talks a lot. He doesn't always have much to say, but he's saying it anyways. And so he just keeps talking. And I'm a very considerate person, I think. So when someone's talking, like even though I don't want to, like I have to sort of respond and I like to keep him engaged. And because of that, it just keeps going. And he just, and everyone's like, you know, all my members are like, dude, do you guys have to talk this much? Two Cuts, our DJ, was the most annoyed out of all of them. He's just like, you guys just are the two biggest talkers like I've ever encountered.
But more so to you.
Yeah, and no, it was
definitely.
He realized at the end of the tour that it was much more because of you. But anyways, he was like, dude, if you like talking so much, why don't you just do a podcast? And here I am.
Boom.
Boom.
The manager in me said, that's absolutely the right thing to do, Two Cuts. Thanks for the suggestion.
But when you and like the rest of Epic Hire is like in a green room, is it literally like silence?
If people like Eddie aren't around,
yeah, it's just you guys.
It really is.
It's pretty quiet.
It's pretty quiet. Because Mithra is always on his iPad. What is he playing?
It's
like a football manager, like soccer manager.
The simulation, right? Yeah, it's the football manager.
Okay, so he's playing this game. And I know that a lot of people love this genre of game, right? And it looks fun, but honestly, I don't get it because you're not actually playing soccer. It's not a game where you're actually playing.
Yeah.
You're pretending to be the owner of this.
The manager.
Yeah, the manager, right? And you basically just set things up and you watch this game play itself.
Right.
Right? And that's what Mithra is doing like all the time. So he doesn't talk to anyone. And then Two Cuts is just like a really grumpy guy. He's just constantly pissed off. I have no idea what is pissing him off, but he's just very angry. So he's not somebody that you want to have a conversation with, really, because he's just consistently pissed off. I don't know what the deal is.
Do you remember your guys' first conversation?
Like ever?
Yeah, ever.
We were getting pho in Seoul. Pho. We were getting some pho, and he was like, I was like, well, you know, we're trying to learn something about each other because we were talking about maybe like working together to make music. So I'm like, what kind of music are you into? Like, whose music are you into? And he named certain artists.
Right.
And then he asked me, and then I named like two artists. And he's like, oh, really? Right. And I'm like, wow, I just met this dude and this guy's, what an asshole.
Right.
I'm like, he asks me what I like. I tell him and he's just like judging me. And that was like the beginning of our long
but it's expected.
Friendship.
It's expected though. Like if he's not grumpy, something's wrong. This actually made me think of one instance on tour.
What?
Do you remember in LA when Two Cuts like looked kind of worried and like a little bit anxious and he was like, I just need a...
Which one was it?
This was at the Wiltern when he was like in his separate room and he just looked like drained.
Yeah.
He looked drained.
He left our green room to go to another room.
Right.
And he was just sitting there like not looking well.
I was worried. I was like, dude, you need a beer? Like, what is it? It's not nerves, right? He's just like, something's off. And then, I mean, we did a great show. Sold out show in LA. It was fantastic. He didn't skip a beat, but it was later that night over drinks that he admitted to us that he didn't sleep at all because he watched all of the Marvel movies from Iron Man.
So, okay. So we thought he had an anxiety attack.
Yeah, literally thought he was having an anxiety attack.
Because Two Cuts is always looking pissed off, but you know he doesn't like leave the room. But he went to like a separate room and basically like locked himself in there. And I went over there and I look at him and he's just not looking well at all. So I was really worried, you know, because I've had anxiety attacks. So I know what it's like. And I'm like, dude, if you need to see someone, like we can go to the hospital or something. I don't know what's wrong with you right now. And he's like, no, I'm just not well. Just like nobody talk to me. I'm something's wrong with me right now. And it was that's all it was. We found out like he just that's he just didn't sleep because he was watching all the Marvel movies again.
From start to finish.
I mean, that's a weird reason to take yourself to another room and just be like angry with everyone.
Could he not nap?
I don't know.
Well, the problem was we actually thought something was wrong and like
usually, we were really worried.
Yeah, I was like, dang, like this show's gonna be a disaster, but it wasn't even like he gave any reasoning as to why he felt that way.
But did you notice though? The best part was when we were all like in that other room, like looking at him, like asking him questions, like, are you okay? Doing all of this, Mithra did not care. Like, it was so funny.
Dude, he was managing his team.
I go back into our room, Mithra is sitting there playing that game. And I'm like, dude, I think Tukas is having like a panic attack. Like, you know, he doesn't look well. And Mithra was just like, just nodding his head. All right. He's just like, cool. Continuing to play that game, right?
Yeah.
Nothing can shake this guy. So that's usually what our green room looks like. And we're just quiet. And then Eddie walks in. He's like, dude, did you see? Like, it's completely packed. Did you see the audience? Oh, my God. And then he's like talking about like just jumps into talking about his dog. He's like, my dog and a protein shake. And he's like, Red Bull. Do you see that music video? And it's like goes on for like an hour. And I always lose my voice before the show. The worst thing a musician can do before he does a show
is talk.
Yo, yelling and singing a lot doesn't, you know, rapping a million bars isn't why your voice goes. Talking is the worst thing a musician can do, right? Like a vocalist can do. And he's always in my green room like an hour before, just making me talk like crazy right before the show. Now I lose my voice and then he comes at the end of the show. He's like, dude, I don't think you're feeling well. Like, is your voice okay? Should I get you some like honey and like some hot water? And I'm just like, it's because of you.
I got something to say.
It's because you talk so much.
I have something to say. So Tukas had that little episode on tour. Mm-hmm. Mithra had like an allergic reaction. That's something that he can't help, right? Remember he had like some hives happen?
He's got like, he keeps getting these like red,
right?
Like just all over his neck and his face.
He had, I don't know, some sort of allergic reaction. I ran down the street. He
refuses to admit that it's an allergy though, which is the weirdest part, right? Like if you want to get better, I mean, you have to admit to yourself that there's a problem. But this guy's like, okay, this guy had like this breakout of like hives basically all over his neck and his like bottom of his chin, just all over. And we're like, dude, you're having an allergic reaction to something. I think you need to like get some medication. And he's like, no. It's because I shaved. And we're like, no. We're like, dude, we all shave. All of us in this room shave. We don't all have that. That's an allergic reaction to something. And he's like, no, it's not. I just shaved. I shaved wrong. And we're like, that's not what shaving wrong looks like.
Right.
And he's still doing that.
Like, that's a problem.
He gets that once in a while. I'm like, dude, allergies. Go to the hospital. You got to get a doctor to check that out. And he's like, no, I shaved wrong. And I'm like, dude, okay, whatever. Shave wrong your whole life.
He just continues playing football manager.
I can't help this guy. I'm trying to help this guy.
But you know what? Like, you had that moment in Seattle when you had like a fever come over you in the span of like 2 hours.
That's true. I did have a doctor come into the venue to take care of me before the show. I got sick on the last 2 days of the tour.
Right.
A lot happened on this tour. The shows were great, though.
Yeah.
I mean, all of the shows were wonderful. Almost each and every single one of them were like, you know, the crowd was amazing. What do you think was the best show?
I mean, it's hard to say, right? Because, I mean, Tukas specifically said each city we went to was the best show.
Yeah.
To the crowd.
Yes.
But I want to say, for me, I thought... I mean, because it was special to me, it was Atlanta.
ATL?
Atlanta was special because
it's your hometown.
Yeah, it's my hometown. My parents came.
Mm-hmm. Sold out friends. Show.
Sold out show.
Yeah.
Atlanta showed mad love. Performance wise, dude? Performance wise, like what made me feel something, dude?
What is this? What is this thing that you're doing? Are you being sarcastic?
It was Minneapolis because it was the beginning and
of
it
the
was
North American
and,
tour.
Yeah, and it was like that's when the bus started. We showed up in Minneapolis. I know people are like, you know, why are we starting in Minneapolis? And I'm like, dude, this is an amazing music town. Like, trust me, it's gonna be amazing. And Minneapolis showed up. We had all the production ready to go.
Uh-huh.
And then I was like watching you guys. I was like, dang, we have 17 more of these shows to go. It's only going to get better. But like, what an introduction.
Minneapolis was amazing because it's my first time there. I had no idea we had so many fans over there. But the crowd was just unbelievable.
Right. Mental.
And that was like a great way to start like the North American tour. For me, I mean, all of the shows were amazing. But there are certain cities that like will stick with me. I think one of them is Brussels in Europe.
Yeah.
You remember Brussels, right?
Oh, I remember Brussels.
Okay. Well, Brussels, thank you to everyone that came.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so, so much. There was an issue, okay? So what happened with the Europe tour is that we originally planned only to do Paris, London, and
Amsterdam.
Those were the only three cities that we were going to do.
Sold out like this.
Yeah, and we announced, and the cities were selling just like crazy.
Hotcakes.
Yeah, and they were big venues. And so I guess the promoter was like, dude, Europe loves Epic High. Let's add more cities because, you know, that's usually what you do. And you know, so we decided to add certain cities. And usually when you add cities later on, it's very hard to get the word out because people assume that people like pay attention during the first, you know, announcement.
Shebang.
Yeah. So it's hard to get the word out. And Brussels was one of those cities that was added on. And so we get there. We get to the venue, and the venue is amazing.
Sick.
Okay, we get there for rehearsals. And this is like one of the most beautiful cities and one of the most beautiful stages I have ever seen. They went overboard with the stage, like, production here. Because, first of all, it's not just a big stage. There are stairs, right? To each side of the stage. It's like on the stage, there's these beautiful, like Disney princess, like coronation, like, you know, like Scarface is the movie Scarface and right. The final scene with the stairs, like that kind of setting where there are stairs that lead from the second floor down. So the stage is like a two floor stage, right? It's amazing.
It's one of those stages that, like, when you guys scouted the venue, everyone was like high-fiving. They're like, it's gonna be lit.
Dude, check out those stairs. Imagine us coming down those stairs at the beginning, right? And every artist, like every performer, loves stairs because they can make the big intro like coming down the stairs. Like, imagine a Beyonce show, right? Boom, starts, and she's like slowly walking down the stairs, and everyone's like loving it, right? And obviously, we're gonna use it. And then the problem was that when the show was starting, we had to wait on the second floor to come down the stairs once the music starts. And when you're up there, there's a wall so that the audience can't see you, and vice versa, you can't see the audience. So,
but I can.
Yeah. So right before the show, Eddie's like, okay, it's time for you guys to go up. And I'm like, how's the crowd? And he's like, dude, he's like, it's amazing. The crowd is great. He's like, it's going to be a great show. So we're like, oh, yeah. Even though we added this city late and couldn't get the word out, people came. Awesome, Brussels. Yeah. And then we get up there. The security takes us upstairs. We get to the second floor. We're behind the wall. the stairs on our side. So Mithra and I are supposed to walk down a set of stairs each as soon as the music starts, right? Tukats is down there already. And we're like behind the wall. I'm like, Mithra, this is going to be awesome. Because we can hear the crowd.
Super loud.
They're super loud. Like, they're pumped. And we're like, okay, it's going to be awesome. Tukats starts the music. And it's our song called In Soul. And it's a very like moody, cool kind of song where like you can kind of like, you know, strut down the stairs. And right before my rap part, I start walking down. Mithra starts walking down. We leave the wall, step on our first couple steps, and then look over very cool, like at the audience. And in front of my eyes, big venue. And there's about like four rows in front of the stage, just packed. And behind them, this huge empty space that is even more visible because I am way up there, way up there on this huge flight of steps, right? And
it's a lot of carpet.
I'm like, yes, sir. No king, no queen, no coat, just the... And I'm like walking down the stairs and it's a long walk down. And I'm just like, oh, it was devastating. I can't really describe the shock because not only was I, you know, just looking at this, I was trying to look as cool as possible. And I turn and I see this and I had to see that for like 33 steps down. And I have to say thank you to all the people that showed up. Like, we love you.
Right.
And
thank you so much.
And Brussels. And they made up for the empty space because that crowd that was actually there, they were amazing.
That was lit.
Yeah, it was really fun. But just the shock. And also the thought in my mind, like, what? Eddie? What? He made it sound like it was packed.
That's right.
What happened there, dude?
So that was just one of those moments that I didn't know what to say, right? Because mm-hmm. you asked me specifically, how is it?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, yeah, you know, they're super loud. Like, they're amazing. And that's true. So
they were amazing.
Right, right. Yeah. So I didn't say, oh, it's a full house or anything like that. You know, I was just strategically ambiguous.
Yeah.
And, you know, I can't tell you that, you know, it's not packed.
Eric went there to perform after we did, right? And he sent me a picture of the stairs. He's like, Pablo, thinking of you. I will never forget the set of stairs, dude. It's a great venue.
Oh, it's beautiful.
Beautiful venue. So, it was a great show, too.
It was a great show.
Brussels, we love you.
Yeah, really, really good food. Waffles. I mean, the architecture. Just amazing.
Amazing, beautiful city.
But let's talk about like how many people said come to Brussels though, right? Like we're making some calculated decisions.
Yeah.
I mean, Tableau says, hey, like, is there real interest in Brussels? I go, dude, I've literally just counted over 5,000 comments with Brussels and the flag. So I'm like,
also Berlin, just these cities really wanted us there.
Just, it was one of those things that Tavo was like, dude, if we don't add these, like, there's going to be a riot. You know, like, there's so much interest. And so for me, I'm like tallying it off. I'm telling Brian from my team, like, dude, like, let's just compile. Like, how many people from Berlin want us to come? And Brian's like, he's like, 8,000 people.
I think we might need to get a bigger venue.
I was like, dude, should we, like, get an arena?
Should we get an arena? Because, like, the demand is massive here. You know, possibly why they got the venue with the stairs, though, right?
Right.
Was it a school night, maybe?
Well, from what we gather, it was hard to get the word out. It was pretty late to get the word out. And also, it was very, wasn't it really like cold?
Yeah. It was. Yeah.
Yeah. It was really cold. I mean, a lot of people came, but yeah, not enough. Right.
it's frankly never enough, right?
Yes.
Even if it's sold out, it's never enough.
But the original cities, like the original cities that we had booked for the tour, they sold out. Yeah. I mean, those were crazy big shows. But you know that artists really never talk about like shows that could have done better, you know, because they want to look like they're killing it all the time.
Right.
And also
we're trying to keep it real on this show though.
And you know how artists, like after a show, they always put up a picture on their Instagram of like the family shot where they're like sitting on the stage with the crowd to the back and all the pictures are awesome. Right. And, the photographer that was with us, his name was, that was you.
Yeah,
okay. Eddie was taking the photo and you can tell, like, for other cities, you can take it at any angle. Just take it, right? Because it's a packed crowd. Brussels, we're like, can Eddie, can you come out and take a family picture with these beautiful people? And Eddie's walking out and you can see Eddie like puzzled. He's like, you know, he's got like, you know, that meme with like the equations and like the confused face of that lady. You can see him with like beautiful mind, like, equations in the air. He's like, how do I take this picture so that it looks awesome? Like, what angle do I have to shoot from? And he did his best. I mean, the picture came out pretty good. You can see it on my Instagram.
Yeah, go check it out at blow by blow.
BLO by BLO. And so our artists usually don't talk about like shows that, you know.
But we keep it real on this show.
Yeah, like, okay, granted, out of like 100 shows, at least 90-something do really, 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 really
like
well.
Like 98
right?
of
yeah,
them.
Yeah, 98. But there are like 2 shows, you know, there are always, there are always like 2 or 3 shows that don't go as planned or, you know, as well as you would want it to.
Right.
And I've had a couple of those in my life.
That's
and
just life, though.
Yeah, that is life. It's this whole conversation right now is a metaphor for life. Not everything's going to happen the way you want it to. For example, Summer Sonic, you know?
Let's talk about Summer Sonic.
I told you about Summer Sonic, right?
Yeah, it's one of the best stories I've ever heard.
Okay. Summer Sonic is one of the biggest festivals in the world. Okay? It happens in Osaka and Tokyo. They do 2 shows. So Summer Sonic is up there with like Coachella and with like Glastonbury. It's like one of the big festivals. So we get there. We got invited to perform. The first show was in Osaka. And then we had to do that. And then the second show would be in Tokyo. So we get to Osaka and we were, I think, second to last on the lineup for that stage. And it was a huge outdoor stage. Okay. It could maybe possibly like, you know, like maybe like 20,000-30,000 people could see this.
Yeah, maybe like even 100,000.
Yeah. Just a huge outdoor, you know, beautiful stage. And we were second to last. And the band that was supposed to perform last, their front man comes up to us. And he's like, dude, we really feel like Epic High should be the last to perform at this stage because you guys are the biggest band on this stage. And I'm like, oh, that's really flattering. Thank you. But it's totally cool. Like, we'll just perform where we're slated to perform. And he's like, no, I insist. Like, we really love your music. We don't feel comfortable, you know, being like sort of like the headline at this stage. We feel like Epic High should go last. We will give up our spot. And I'm like, what a gentleman. This guy's, what a great band. Thank you. And I'm like, okay. So we switched spots. And all these other bands are performing at the moment. And we're like, hey, we're last now. And our management at the time, they're like, oh, that's cool. And my members are like, oh, yeah. Pumped, right? Two Cuts is like, hell yeah. And then the band that we switched spots with, they go up to perform. And they're performing and the crowd is huge,
lit.
Right? The crowd is lit. And we're like, oh, this is going to be an unbelievable show. And this was before we did like Coachella. And this is before we did like big festivals. So this was our first like, you know, huge like world festival kind of thing. And they're performing and it's our time to go after them. So we're like preparing. they stop. And it's our turn. Two Cuts gets up on stage first. And something is not right, right? Like he gets up there, gets in front of the DJ box. And he looks at the crowd and he's like, something just goes over his like face. Like, I don't know what it is. I'm like, what's going on here? Because I can't see the crowd from the side. So I'm like, what's going on here? And
I'm Two Cuts. I'm facing the stage and you're looking at him.
Yeah,
like
I'm looking at him from the side. And I see Two Cuts like, I haven't seen that facial expression before. And he plays the music, starts the music. I have to jump up on stage as I'm rapping. So I'm like waiting. My turn comes. I'm like, I'm a born hater. And I step out onto the stage and people are migrating out of this area like something happened.
Like a stampede.
Yeah, like it's like a stampede the hell out of here. Okay? Like trying to avoid us or something, right? And I'm like, what? And I get out there and all those people had disappeared and there were maybe at the most 30 people.
Oh.
Maybe. I'm like, you know, I'm nearsighted. I'm trying to like paint the best picture here. Maybe like 30 people at the most 50. Okay? Because of my vision. And what had happened was that on the other stage over there, far away, Pharrell was performing. Okay? At the exact same time that the band that switched with us would have performed at, Pharrell is performing over there. And this was when Pharrell dropped Happy.
Oh.
Okay?
R.I.P.
And not only that, he had Nego of Bape fame, the creator of Bape, come up on stage with him. Okay? I truly contemplated going over there myself. Okay? So the first song ends, and I'm looking at the people that are left after this Lion King-level stampede. Okay? This is like an epic, like, Bible, Old Testament kind of stampede out of like where we are. And I'm looking at whoever's left and I have to say something to them. And what I had planned was, my God, it's good to be here. Thank you so much for coming out. Everyone's like, ah. But now I can't do that. So it's like a tightly knit family. Finish the song and
it's
I'm like
a listening session.
Yeah, it's a listening session, right? It's like it's like a spotlight, like listening session. And I grab the mic and I'm like, thank you to everyone that is here. I know that some of you really want to be over there because apparently Pharrell's performing. And to tell you the truth, we want to kind of go over there too. But thank you so much for being here. You guys are the true fans. And we performed our asses off for these people. Okay? And then some more people came. So I think it became like maybe 60, 70 people. But we performed seriously like our lives depended on it. But that was a big hit. And then after that, we performed in Tokyo. That was much better because we of course, would not switch times now.
You guys smartened up.
Yeah, we smartened up. And it did much better. And you know, thank God it turned out well, but I will never forget those 30 people, possibly 50.
And when you told him Pharrell was playing, I'm sure a few like left right on the spot.
Dude, as soon as I said it, I think because Pharrell's performing over there, I saw two people like trying to, you know, trying to migrate out of here. But, you know, if there's a big crowd and you're trying to leave, it's fine, right? But they're like trying to like secretly leave and there's only like 20 people in front of them. So I can see them. But, you know, that's what happens.
What was like the smallest amount of people you've ever performed
for? Three.
Three?
Yeah. Long time ago when we first performed in clubs and stuff, there were like three people in the audience. And I you can't say they were the audience because they also were the guys that did like the equipment and the sound.
Classic.
Yeah. One of the guys was the guy that gave me the mic. So yeah, things like that happen though.
Hey, but you know, those 30 fans, like we'll never forget them. Like they're
possibly 50, I said.
Maybe 50.
Yeah.
What a moment. That's
I will never forget them, and I'm sure they will never forget us because we really put on a show for them. And this was the reason why, like when we went to Coachella, I think we went to Coachella the year after.
That's when we first met.
Yeah, and you know, Coachella is a big deal. So, and we were, you know, there were these articles like the first Korean act to like perform on the big stage. So there was a lot of hype about us as well and just a lot of pressure. And when we got to that tent, the Sahara tent, it's a pretty big venue.
Yeah.
And the act before us was a DJ that, you know, he was working really hard. But no joke, we looked into the tent and there were maybe like four to five people. Yeah, I'm not kidding. 4 to 5 people jamming out to his music. And we are supposed to go on like right after this guy. And I'm like, oh my God.
Sorry.
I go over to Tukats and Mithra. I'm like, they're like, how is it? And I'm like, dude, Summer Sonic. So Mithra's like, so like 30 people? And I'm like, worse than Summer Sonic. Worse. And the three of us are like, what are we going to do? And Two Cuts is like, hey, let's just perform like when we first started. Like that, you know, club show I told you about. He's like, let's just do it. Like, let's just have fun. Because like no one's going to watch anyways. And we're like, all right. And then we got up there. But some miraculous thing happened that, you know, people showed up right for our thing. And it got completely packed. So it was like a miracle. It was even better than, I feel kind of bad for the guy that DJed in front of us though.
He actually quit music.
Because that's possible. Because yeah. The second weekend.
He wasn't there.
Yeah, it was the same lineup, but his act was, you know, it was replaced with someone else. So possibly he left. I hope he's like, you know, killing it somewhere right now though.
Yeah.
You know.
For sure. And I think, you know, what a moment that was. That was a monumental moment. Something as iconic as Coachella.
And if Summer Sonic didn't happen the way it did, you know, I wouldn't know how to appreciate things like Coachella or any show that I do actually.
Right.
Like, going back to Brussels, I performed with the same amount of energy and gratitude as I did in London or, you know, or New York or San Francisco or one of these big shows. So, and I'm sure the crowd felt it. So I think it builds character when you get, you know.
You can't experience the highs without the lows.
Oh, that's right, Eddie. Educate us.
You can follow me at EDNAM10, EdNAM10 for more quotes like that.
It's interesting that you would plug your own like personal Instagram as opposed to your like company's Instagram, which is significantly more important, right? I mean, how do you divide what you put up on those two Instagrams?
I actually have a social media manager for the EN management.
You do?
Yeah.
Who?
Don't worry about it.
You had me plugging ENMGMT instead of your personal one. And now you're plugging your personal one, which is something.
Well, that's because that quote, yeah, I may have heard it somewhere. Maybe someone else made that up,
mm-hmm.
but it came out of my mouth. So for that reason.
Dude, I just spilled coffee on myself as you were saying that because.
That's my quote now.
Dude, do you have like this passion to become like an act yourself?
No.
Because I look at you and Eric, and although Eric's the, you know, he's the entertainer, he's the musician, he's the guy on stage. But if I didn't know that, you act way more like you want to be an entertainer.
That's just not true.
Okay. You don't get that? Totally, I mean, right?
Honestly, some people may perceive it as that because my sense of humor is like pretty good. Right? It doesn't mean I want to be an entertainer. I'm more of a behind the scenes kind of guy. And this comes very like effortless.
I'm not so sure.
Anyways, that was I felt like that was a comprehensive story of, you know, you win some, you lose some, but at the end of the day, Epic High fans are still the best and you lay it all on the field.
Hell yeah.
And it's you know, it's not about the size of the dog. It's about the fight. Wait, is that right?
What?
Wait, is that right?
What is this metaphor?
Wait.
What?
I'm saying like
the, what do you mean size?
No,
of
no,
the
like
dog?
The crowds.
But the fight.
I'm saying the crowds.
Okay. That's a weird.
The crowd can be small, but it's still awesome.
I don't think there's a quote that's like the crowd could be small, but it's still awesome. Isn't it like the size? It doesn't matter the size of the horse.
No, it's definitely not the size of the horse. It's like the. It's not about the fight and the dog. It's about the size of the
dogs. Okay, fight. Well, we're not talking about dog fights here, but we are.
talking about like
there's a proverb, right?
Right.
Okay,
we're not saying it right, but you get what I'm saying.
Hey,
we're not philosophers.
What
here,
we're
dude.
Trying to say to you guys is that like, you know, things are not going to go perfectly all the time.
That's right. There's right? a lesson here.
But your level of gratitude can't change. Okay. And a lot of musicians know this, but also a handful of musicians, you know, for them, the crowd matters so much that if it's not packed, you know, if only 20% of the audience is packed, they will only give 20% of themselves. And I know people that are like that, and that's not the way to go. You have to give like over 100% of yourself, like all the time. Even if, you know, you have three people in the audience is what we're trying to say. And even in life, even if you're not a musician, I think that's the way to look at life. And Diane gave us the quote,
before you go to that. So how do you relate that to life though?
Hmm?
How do you relate that to life?
Okay.
You said like very, it makes a lot of sense. Okay. 20% of the fans, of course you can't give 20% of your performance, right? Like 20% of your set list.
There's no small part.
20%.
Okay. I'm going to relate it to life. Okay.
Like draw it out for me.
Okay.
I'm a little confused.
Let's say you're a manager.
Okay.
Okay. You're managing acts, right? Some of your acts are going to bring in a lot of, you know, a lot of revenue, a lot of opportunities, just because they're a bigger act.
Correct.
But some of your acts will be starting off or something, or may, you know, be not doing too well at the time. But, you know, you still give 100% of yourself.
Oh, 100%.
Right? And that's the same way it is with school, with like your job, with family. You know, like you might not get 100% of the love back.
Right.
But you still have to give 100% of the love to your loved ones.
So just giving 100% all the time, no matter what you're doing.
Yeah. Just be grateful and just do it, you know, regardless of the conditions.
Right.
Is what I'm trying to say.
Okay. I see.
Get it now?
Yeah, I get it now.
All right.
I get it now.
Hey, it shut down your phone. What did the quote say?
It's by Mark Twain.
Mark Twain, one of the greatest writers, right? It's not the size of the dog in the fight.
It's the...
Guess.
It's the size of the fight and the dog.
Yes. It's not the size of the dog in the fight. It's the size of the fight and the dog. But this is not what Eddie said.
It doesn't. But what Eddie
said was, it's not the size of the dog in the fight. It's the size of the dog. The size of the fight. It's the size of a dog.
Here's the crazy thing. But here's the crazy thing. Everyone
for
listening.
For a dog, the size matters.
All 1 million listeners right now, they understood what I was talking about. And that's what matters. Because I still put in my 100% effort to come up with that quote.
But
for that reason, your listening comprehension matched the 100% that I put in.
That is true. You only offered 20% of the quote. But many of us understood 100% of it.
That's right.
So everything in this podcast is a lesson.
We're always going to have a lesson.
That was great. I learned a lot today. Thank you, Eddie, for taking us down memory lane.
Yeah, no problem. That's
valuable lessons, dude.
That's what I'm here for. Anyways.
Thank you today for listening. If you haven't heard episode 1 yet, go back and listen. And episode 3 should be available too, so go and listen to that. Eddie, Nam, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, no problem, dude.
You have many big things and big... you have a big heart, although you are a very small person. You're a tiny man.
Hey.
You're a tiny man with a big heart. You're an acorn of a man with a cantaloupe-sized heart. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, thank you so much. You can listen to the Tableau podcast on anywhere that has podcasts. You can watch the full video on YouTube. Just search for the Tableau podcast on YouTube. Mm-hmm. And follow the Tableau podcast on IG and Twitter. You can also follow my personal Instagram, Blow by Blow, and Eddie Nam
at Blow.
Eddie Nam at EDNam10. What's a 10?
It's my number in soccer.
When did you play soccer?
Dude, I played soccer my entire life.
In high school?
In college.
Okay, and you haven't been able to get over that.
Yeah, it's just, you know, it's like
still stuck with you, like
my
behind
AOL,
your name.
AOL Instant Messenger, just stuck for life.
All right. Thank you so much. Go to iTunes and leave a review, like a glowing review, 5 stars, saying, I learned so much to propel my life forward through this podcast.
Right. And no matter what, whether it's 20% or 100%, it's not about the size of the fight. About the dog in the size.
It's not about the size of the room. It's not about the size of the audience. It's about the audience.
In the size.
Thank you so much.